Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 194 of the Tool Shed with Click and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how did you enjoy the WBC there, man?
It's awesome. It couldn't have been more fitting in to Ohtani versus Trout. Ohtani's throwing 102 and like 93-mile-an-hour sliders, just insane. So I think there was some absurd stat that I saw about how many times Trout had swung and missed three times in an at bat. It was just like very low. And like, that's what Ohtani made him do. Like, just made him look silly. Ohtani's just that good. Like, we're living in just like an age of incredible baseball right now. And it was awesome to see. Like, obviously that'd been cool if like Trout had like hit a walk off, but still pretty cool to see the ending of the game overall. Really good. Yeah. So here was a stat. Trout has three swinging strikes in only 24 of his 6,174 MLB career plate appearances. So kind of nuts, but that's what Ohtani made him do. Like, just insane. So very fun series. Good baseball. The U.S. needs to pick better pitching.
Yeah, that was the lineup was great, but yeah, the pitching didn't quite live up to standards there. But yeah, it was phenomenal. Yeah, there was a couple unfortunate things, obviously, with Altuve getting hit in the hand, which people are like, oh, screw the WBC. Like, that could happen anywhere. You know, the Diaz injury. But overall, phenomenal. And it shows how much it means to these guys. You talk about the guys in the Dominican Republic, Venezuela, USA, Japan, playing for your home country. And that's what everyone wanted to end the game, right? Everyone's like, oh, I want to see Trout versus Ohtani. Like, that's the closest we'll ever get. Like, that'd be like the equivalent of like Babe Ruth facing Willie Mays or something like that. And man, two of the best players to ever play the game to facing off to end that. It was a great tournament. And another tournament going on I want to mention real quick, the 2023 Baseball Podcast Bracketology, put on by our good buddy Chris at Baseball Pod. So quick shout out to Chris, all the work he does promoting our pod and all the other great podcasts. There's 64 of them in here, and yes, there are 64 fantasy baseball podcasts, even more. And some people elected to opt out this year, but just go over to check out his website, baseball-pods.com, and then right there on the homepage, you'll see a link to show the entire bracket. So there might be some podcasts you never heard of that you can go check out. You know, most of them all have Twitter feeds linked and all that jazz, so go check that out. We, unfortunately, are about to lose in the final four. It was a great run. Really appreciate everyone's support. We got to the Elite Eight last year, Final Four this year, snuck by Sleeper in the Bus, obviously the, you know, longtime staple, the industry titan, as many have called them, and which is absolutely accurate. So like a quick shout out to, you know, Chris for putting this on at Baseball Pods on Twitter and all the great work he does promoting all the great fantasy baseball podcasts. There's a lot of them. What a good information out there. So definitely go check that out, and maybe you'll find a new show or two that you didn't know about that you might like, and you can add it to your rotation. So go check that out. And before we get into the show here, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at AirCross04. Our show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please drop that 5-star rating and review. Check out my Patreon for more work from me and Chris's Substack for more work from him. And before we get into the show, we want to say a quick word about our friends at Underdog Fantasy. If you sign up using the promo code Toolshed, you'll receive a 100% deposit match up to $100, and that can be used for any of their fun fantasy games, including MLB best balls, individual player pick'ems across all sports, and so much more. Sign up today using that code Toolshed at play.underdogfantasy.com/P-the-toolshed. All right, we have a Dynasty mailbag or Dynasty and Prospect mailbag episode in store today that we sneak one more in. A lot of fun stuff going on, spring training, WBC, everything else. So we figured we'd sneak one more of these in before the season. We'll probably do these, you know, periodically throughout the season. I don't know if it'll be monthly, every other month, but we'll get them in throughout the season as well. People always seem to like them, and we have about 7,000 questions. So we'll try to get through as many as we can, but it's probably won't be able to get through them all, but thank you to everyone that submitted all these great questions. We'll start with all the prospect-focused ones, starting with a pretty fun one. How does Christian Encarnacion Strand compare to Tristan Casas and Kyle Manzardo? I think the, you know, high-level answer to that, Chris, is the power's there, but he's not, you know, not as good of a pure hitter. The contact rates aren't there. Too much, you know, more swing and miss. The other two are much more polished hitters. But, yeah, I think that's pretty much the high-level answer there. I think I love Strand. I think we kind of differ a little bit. I saw a tweet the other day that you were looking to sell Strand. I'm kind of looking to buy right now. There are the warts there, but, yeah, the other two are just on another level in terms of just like their pure hitting ability.
Yeah, I mean, like, Encarnacion Strand's done some really good stuff this spring, and I think he probably wasn't on most people's radar really until this spring, unless you followed him pretty closely. But Encarnacion Strand just doesn't have the contact skills that are that I will say Casas' contact skills are fine, but Manzardo's contact skills are elite. Like, Manzardo's probably a 7-grade hitter. It's like a 70. He's really, really good on the 2080 scale. I mean, he doesn't chase. He makes contact at a very high clip, like one of the best contact hitters in the minors. And Manzardo's knock has always been his EVs. Like, they're just not that great. But dude still had a 44% hard hit rate last year. Like, I think you've seen this spring, if you've seen him as home runs, like, he's capable of getting a power. Now, Casas is the big power. I still think Casas profiles for more power than Encarnacion Strand does. And Casas, you know, he comes with a little better contact than Strand. Strand's just glaring red flag is that he chases every breaking ball out of the zone. And he was chasing against bad pitchers in high A. And the stats are easy to kind of buff up when you're facing that pitching as well, because those pitchers are also leaving a lot of meatballs over the zone. The really telling fact is what hitters look like when they jump to double A and then triple A. And while Christian Encarnacion Strand's faced better competition this spring than those lower levels, like, there's still chase issues. And until I see that corrected, then I really struggle to buy in. Like, if you're running contact percentage in the 60% and you're chasing 40% of the time, like, you're just going to get exploited in the major leagues. And this just really screams like Franmil Reyes type profile to me. And Reyes has had some successful seasons, but look at Franmil now. He's on his like fourth team in 2 years. And I don't know, like, there may be a season where Encarnacion Strand does hit 30 home runs and looks pretty decent, but I feel like the fall off's pretty quick unless he can really curb those chase rate issues. So for me, like, it's not even close. And like, I'm selling just because of the hype on him. While meanwhile, I really believe in Manzardo, and I think Casas is on the verge of an MLB breakout this year.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. As much as I do like Encarnacion Strand, and even though those warts are there, the issues are there that need to be corrected, or 100% agree that he's going to really be limited moving forward, I love the power. I think, you know, the BABIP boost, the Great American Ballpark, we'll see, but those need to be corrected. But even with, you know, I do like him, it's not even close. Like, he's, you know, I think he's probably in the 40s or around 50 for me, and Casas and Manzardo are both top 20 in an OBP. Manzardo's top 10 and Casas is like 14 or 15. So yeah, these guys, and OBP, it's a much bigger gap. And Encarnacion Strand does not walk that much. I think it was around like 7.5% last year. Well, Manzardo and Casas were both well over 10%. So yeah, I think well over 12%, both of them. So yeah, I think it's a pretty sizable gap there. Next one, Miller, Stone, Pepio, trio of fun Dodger arms. Any of them elite and rank the three? I mean, for me, it's, you know, Miller and Stone are very close, and then a gap, and then Pepio. I think he walks way too many, probably a bullpen arm long-term. Miller and Stone, man, I go back and forth so much on them. At this current point in time, I have Miller by a smidge over Stone. Stone had such a good year last year. Probably a little bit safer, but I don't know. Elite, I don't know. I guess what your definition of elite is, if you mean like a frontline guy, I don't think so. Could they be solid number twos, high at number threes? Sure. I think that's definitely in the cards, but I don't think they're, I wouldn't say either of them are elite. I usually don't throw that word elite or ace or frontline around too much.
Yeah, that's a a term that's reserved for like two pitching prospects in baseball. And unfortunately, one of them's hurt right now. So they're all really good. And I actually think that Ryan Pepiot has made some really solid improvements this spring. Like I was pretty confident he was a bullpen guy, but he's got really good stuff. I mean, all these guys are just the Dodgers mold where they all have really good changeups. And Pepiot features a solid fastball and slider as well. Look at Bobby Miller. Bobby Miller probably has the best combo of pitches of them. And I think he's got a 70 fastball plus slider plus change. He throws a curveball too. I think Miller probably needs to hone in his command a bit. But Gavin Stone is his own special type of pitcher. I think that Gavin Stone, he kind of is I don't know who I'd comp him to. He's a changeup heavy, elite changeup guy, but he's got really good command too. The fastball's solid. I think that people think the fastball's not great, but his fastball's consistently mid 90s up to 98. The changeup is just probably one of the best changeups of any prospect. And when you pair, if he can get improve on the breakers, then I think he could move to that SP1 fantasy territory, because that's always lacking. So that's the biggest thing for him. But Stone's just I don't want to comp him to Bieber type stuff, but man, this is the Bieber mold where it's really elite command, but Stone has the really good changeup too. So it'll be interesting, but I like all three of these guys. He said elite. I'm not sure, but there's a lot to like in all three of these guys.
Yep. There's more pitching gold for the Dodgers. It's a never ending supply out there. Many teams are pretty envious and wish they had that. But yeah, so I think, so did you say which one you liked more, Miller or Stone, Chris?
I have Stone the highest of all of them.
Okay. Yeah, I go back and forth. Ask me again next week. You'll see. It's I love both Miller and Stone. And I still like Pepiot. I just think he has the lowest floor and lowest ceiling of the three, but obviously it's the Dodgers, so I wouldn't put it past them to completely correct his command and control issues and get him up to being Pepiot could be a solid mid-rotation arm. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And this, we'll see all three of these guys could make double-digit starts, all three of them this year. We'll see how some of the Gonsolin's already hurt. We'll see how many starts to get like Kershaw. So you could see pretty sizable amount of starts for all three of these guys this year. Next up on the docket, another fun pitching prospect, Daniel Espino, who there was a report out earlier today that he was ahead of schedule, could be in game action by sometime in May. And someone asked, does this kind of change our outlook on Espino? Honestly, no. It's promising that he's hopefully be back sooner. Obviously you wouldn't want this news to be on the other end of the spectrum and he'd be out longer, so that's I guess promising in general, but he still had multiple injuries, with arm issues and shoulder issues as well. Obviously you can make an argument that Espino has the highest upside of any pitching prospect in baseball. He's in that discussion, whether it's him, G-Rod, Painter. It's probably one of those three in terms of his pure upside. But so much risk here, Chris. It's I've loved Espino for a while. He's got so many nasty offerings. Fastball that can touch triple digits, two great breakers, a good changeup as well. He's really improved, his strike throwing ability. He's going from a thrower to a pitcher, locating, sequencing. But man, it's just, there's a lot of risk there. Still some bullpen risk. I hate to say it, but there is some of that risk there. I don't know. I guess I'm still in, obviously, because the upside is tremendous, but I am concerned still. I mean, I don't think him coming back early really changes that.
Yeah, me either. Until he proves health consistently, pretty out on him. Maybe it's a chance where you can buy low and see where it takes you, but I mean, for me, it's not really worth it. I will say this is the appropriate time to buy a pitching prospect. You don't buy Daniel Espino when he's at the peak hype and everybody's talking about him. This would be the time to do so, right now, I think, if you believe that he can get healthy. And I'm just not really sure that I'm there yet. We often see these guys just stay beat up for a lot of their career, sadly, until he puts some of this behind him and shows that he can be a regular starter. Then I have major concerns. He's a bullpen arm, so we'll see. But no, it doesn't change my perspective too much.
Yeah, same here. Next question was around our process for evaluating standout low-level prospects, and this person put, you know, rookie ball up to like low A. So, Chris, what are your thoughts on that one?
Well, these are always tough looking at, like, what's legit, what's not, because the lower levels, it's kind of what I was saying with Encarnacion Strand. Like, when you see these guys, like, high, low A, DSL pitching, like, complex pitching, not very good. So, for hitters, like, there's got to be more to it, like, with what you're looking for. So, if you're watching film, like, don't just watch highlights. Like, watch whole at-bats. And I'm looking for whether they're swinging through fastballs in the zone. I'm looking for whether they're chasing pitches outside of the zone, like if they're chasing every breaker. Like you said, you can get away with putting up really good numbers in the lower levels just if you're decent contact in the zone, like you're just feasting off meatballs. So the higher you go up, the more this is kind of exploited a bit. So that's what I'm looking for with hitters. Like with pitchers, it's like the stuff, really. I know command's highly important, but at the same time, like some of these pitchers that just have like elite stuff, it just works. And like they kind of refine the command as they move up to minor leagues. And I know that's kind of like an inverse process for some people. And it's something I'm going back and forth on a lot. Like, what do I value most in a pitcher? But like, you can't really coach stuff. I think you can coach command a little bit, but like guys with elite stuff, it's hard to coach that. So that's what I'm looking for in the short term. Like, obviously, if you can get some data points on these guys, it's very helpful too. Like that, the backup, the eye test, like goes a long way, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's the problem with just going off of Twitter, because like you mentioned, you're just getting the highlights, the good, not any of the bad. And obviously, it's hard for people to watch. It's hard for even you and I to watch everybody. And obviously, we can't see everybody live. I would love to, but even it's hard to, we don't have enough time in the day to watch like full game video, like multiple at bats for hitters, multiple innings for pitchers of all these guys. There's hundreds upon hundreds of prospects. So, you know, obviously, when you see someone that catches your eye, I mean, I think the first thing that usually puts someone onto a player. I mean, what do you think? You think the first thing that kind of starts that inquiry for people, probably you see a stat, right? You see someone like, oh, this person, and then like, all right, well, the stats are great. And then let's dig deeper. And sometimes it's hard to find a lot of it, especially lower the level, it's harder to find the video. So sometimes you have to go off of some stats, and that's, you know, could have its benefits, but it also doesn't paint the full picture. But one thing you can see from at any level is approach, especially with hitters. Are they striking out? Like if a hitter already has, oh yeah, they could have a lot of home runs and steal some bags, but maybe they're striking out 36% of the time, like in rookie ball. And that's just not good. Like you mentioned, the quality of pitching down there is not good. It's either, yeah, maybe you got some guys with good stuff, but they don't know how to harness it yet. There's a lot of inexperience. So looking at just approach in general, walk rates, strikeout rates, that can, you know, help a little bit. But yeah, it's just trying to then try to find some reports, because there are people that have seen these guys, you know, go look, you know, Google, do some Google searching, some more video, maybe on YouTube, try to find more video or a scouting report, see what other evaluators that have maybe seen this particular player have to say. So it's kind of, and I don't think either of us gave like a pretty precise answer on this, because it's hard to give a precise answer on this. But yeah, those, I guess, in a roundabout way, some of the things we both kind of look for. And that's moving over. There's a lot of specific player questions as well, so we'll try to like not go super in depth on these so we can get through them all. The first one though was very intriguing, so I wanted to lead off with this one. Was any concern about Francisco Alvarez's hit tool? I don't know if concern is the right word. You know, I've seen Alvarez a handful of times live. He was pretty aggressive, but at the same time, he's never had, you know, super high K rates in the minor leagues. He's made it work, but I've also wondered if he's more of like a 250, 255, 260 hitter, but I think that's fine. I think it's very attainable given his quality of contact. The power's there, no doubt about that. And he walks a good amount. I think long term, you could see maybe someone pretty close to like a Will Smith type of player. Like Will Smith's been chilling in that 255, 260 range, good OBP, 25 home runs. I think that's what we could see out of Alvarez if everything clicks. So I'm not concerned, but I do think there's a bit more value in OBP formats than average formats.
Yes, plate discipline is good. His contact is questionable, I think. And I've always kind of expressed this concern, which is why I've never gone as insane on him as some have. Like
right.
He's always hovered in my like 20 to 30 range for fantasy prospects. The power is legit. I mean, he hits the ball insanely hard, but there are some questionable contact numbers. And so maybe he's a 250 hitter. Like, I mean, he ran a 66% contact rate last year, 75% in zone. Like, it's not great. So maybe he's a 240 hitter. Could come with 30 home runs. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned about him moving off the position, honestly. Like, I think he's a DH type. His body concerns me a bit. And I'm just wondering if he ends up being a DH. That's my bigger concern.
See, what is he listed at? I mean, he's not like Alejandro Kirk body type. But no, nobody really is. But what is the I'm curious. What's the listed height and weight for Francisco Alvarez? 5'10", 233. What's Kirk just for? Alejandro, if I can type it right. Alejandro Kirk. So 5'10", 233 for Alvarez. Kirk is 5'8", 245. So I guess that's not terribly far off. Obviously, Kirk a couple inches shorter and a little bit heavier. But, you know, and Alvarez looks every bit of that. Like I've seen Alvarez live several times, double A. He was very, very stout. But I didn't think it was a huge issue. But you also got to wonder, something I've kind of learned more and more is kind of read what these teams are saying, what they're doing. And the Mets haven't really seemed fully committed to him as their starting catcher yet. They just drafted Kevin Parada. Maybe they think, hey, maybe Alvarez is more of a long-term DH type, and Parada's our long-term catcher. That could be what the long-term the kind of thought process is there. I don't know. That's just purely speculation. So to kind of take that with a grain of salt, but I don't know. I do have that question too. The bat will play. It's just, is it going to be at catcher full time, or is it going to be mostly at DH? I think early on, he at least catches enough to maintain eligibility, but you know, 6-7 years from now, is he still a catcher or is he a DH at that point? We'll see. But no question about the bat, though. I think that's definitely the power, especially. I think, 30 home run bat, 250 plus, good OBP. I think he'll be fine overall. A couple of younger guys here. Josue De Paula. I love saying that. Josue. It sounds so nice. Josue De Paula of the Los Angeles Dodgers, one of the buzzier prospects, and another buzzy prospect from the NL West, Jackson Merrill. I think people just kind of wanted our thoughts on these two. Chris, what are your thoughts on Josue De Paula and Jackson Merrill?
De Paula's getting some pretty insane comps, like Yordan Alvarez comps, like Baby Bonds. Like, these are coming from within their org. Like, this is crazy. Like, the hype is like there, but I'm surprised that his like dynasty value is not going like nuclear yet. Like, he could, based on the hype, like, I'm surprised he's not like Jason Dominguez levels like when he signed. And he's not. So I do think he's a good buy. I mean, we're talking a small sample in the DSL, but you know, he was an international signee, but he's also from Brooklyn. So like, he grew up here. There's just athletic blood lines in his family. Like, this is, if I'm not mistaken, he's Stephon Marbury's cousin. So like, there's some crazy athletic bloodlines. Like, I just really buy into it. I mean, like, insane contact skills. Like, the power will come. Like, we're looking at like a 6'3 profile with plenty of room to fill out. So the power will come. Like, he already showed the good feel for contact. So De Paula is like one of the easiest buys. Like, I know that he's not an easy to trade for right now, but like, honestly, like, I would trade a top 50 prospect for him if I had to. Like, if I could get off of, I don't know, like, I'm just thinking about a random prospect this like ranked fairly highly that I would trade for him. I'm pulling up my list. I would do that in a heartbeat for De Paula, because I think that, like, meanwhile, while like Jackson Merrill's got all the hype and he's bumped up significantly this offseason, like, that doesn't really happen with De Paula. So I would buy. Like, I would trade like I trade Brooks Lee for him. I would trade Tyler Soderstrom for him. Like those are guys around my 50 range. Harry Ford, I'd trade Harry Ford for him. Luciano, I trade all these guys for him. So I think that's how good he could be. Merrill's good across the board. He's got to lift the ball more. I mean, he ran a 60% ground ball rate last year. I think he's making a conscious effort to improve that, but got to see it in action. So, yeah, both those guys are buys right now in my book.
Yeah, I think they're both – I mean, to a degree, I wonder if the hype on Merrill is, like, too high
he
right
may
now.
Be peak. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to – I don't know if he's – I'm not saying he's a sell, but I don't know. I'm not sure how I want to, if I want to say he's a buy, he's a sell. Is he both? I don't know. It's weird. Like he kind of fits both molds. We're like, all right, the profile, he's, you know, very good profile. He's good long-term projection. He's a very good hitter. He's shown more power potential to see if he fills out his frame a bit more. So that's some projection left on that frame. I just wonder if he's going to be one of those better in real life than fantasy guys. So I wonder if he does put on that bulk. I wonder if that's at expense of some of his speed. He's not like a speedster to begin with. So I wonder how much speed impact is there with Jackson Merrill. I think he's going to be a very good player. I just wonder if he's slightly more valuable, you know, in real life than fantasy. And DePaula, yeah, he's absolutely shooting up. And it's like, I don't know how high I want to go with him. At one point, I'm like, all right, all the tools are there to be a huge impact player. And so he's already shown a great feel for hitting, power projection. But same with him, he's, even though he stole some bags, there's not a lot of the projections you see, a lot of like the tool grades you see don't kind of project his speed favorably. I think they think he's all going to fall off. Like, for instance, BA, or Baseball America, sorry, has him as a 40 speed. So it's hard to see like how high I want to go with DePaula. But yeah, all the, like he's got, like the bat is legit. And I still think he can add some sort of speed element. And he walked more than he struck out last year. That's encouraging. So I want to see if he can follow it up. Like right now, it's like, all right, I'm going to bump him up my rankings, decent amount. But this is a guy that if he kind of goes out and he'll be stateside this year in the complex level out in Arizona, Rancho Cucamonga, or not Rancho Cucamonga, what's that place called, Chris? Where the Dodgers are. I'm blanking.
Camelback Ranch.
Camelback Ranch. There we go. I don't know why I thought Rancho Cucamonga. That's different altogether. But yeah, he'll be coming stateside, playing out there in the complex level. And if he's, you know, doing something similar this year as he did last year, you're probably seeing him top 25. Like, he's going to be even more of a, you know, riser this year. So though he's definitely a buy. Merrill, I guess it depends on where the value is for Merrill in your league. Because he could be a buy, he could be a sell, depending on how high that hype in your league is on Jackson Merrill. But again, good, bad. I just wonder if he's kind of going too high right now. That's my kind of concern. A few more here. Nick York, Kevin Alcantara, and Heston Kjerstad. So we'll start with Kjerstad, though. Someone asked, does his strong spring move him up rankings? And I think it does, not to some degree. I don't like to make huge adjustments off of spring training, but it's just the fact that he's still kind of getting back into the rhythm off all the missed time with the heart issue, and which is good. I think that's all behind him now. He's shown the power. He was one of the best players out in the AFL where Chris and I were at. He was hitting tanks in the Derby. Like, we know there's 30 home runs in the bat, 250, 260 type of hitter. So, yeah, I think just off of that, the fact that he's getting further and further away from all those issues that he had health-wise and continues to, you know, perform well pretty much everywhere he's gone. So, yeah, he's been creeping up my rankings.
Yeah, he's looking really good. I think we have to factor in that, like, health's been a major issue for Kjerstad, and that's important to note. I mean, he had myocarditis, which set him back significantly, like missed all of 2021. He missed time last year as well for injuries. Like, he was ready to go in spring training and got hurt again. So that kind of like put a damper on things. He looked really good in the AFL when we saw him live. He's looked really good so far this spring. I think he debuts pretty quickly. I think Kjerstad's a really easy dynasty buy.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just hit everywhere he's gone. Yeah, there's still, I don't think he's going to be like a super high average guy, but the power's there. Average should be okay, at least. Yeah, he's definitely continued. Basically, since he returned, it's been a slow rise in my rankings, and I don't see that really stopping here in 2023. As for Nick York, I know you've seen York live, Chris. He's dealing with what was the injury he was dealing with again this spring?
He's hurt again with a back injury.
Back, that's right. So I don't know. And I've talked with others that, you know, other evaluators that are not overly high on him. They're like, yeah, he's okay. That's kind of like the general kind of summary of everybody I talked to about York. Yeah, he's okay. I'm kind of there too. Like, that's kind of what I thought when he was drafted. And yeah, he had that nice year in 2021. Last year, injuries, poor performance. We're like, all right, let's maybe give him a pass, but he's still injured. I don't know. I just don't think there's a huge impact player here. Maybe he's a low-end regular, but is that in Boston? I don't know. Well, the way that our middle infield is going, maybe. But he's okay. He's a guy that, while Kjerstad's been slowly rising, York's kind of been going the other way, you know, slowly falling on my rankings. Where do I have Nick York right now? I have him, 143 right now. And every time I kind of update my rankings, it's like, all right, 15 spots lower. So it's a guy that's, he's still a top one for me, but I don't think he's got much appeal to rise back up.
Yeah, I talked to somebody that's been at minor league spring training and Red Sox camp. And they said that you should sell York immediately in Dynasty. So if you can get out from under him, then probably would. Like, I wrote off last year to injuries a bit, but it's become such a constant thing. Like, I don't know. I mean, he could be starting in high A again. This would be his third season in high A. I mean, not full season, obviously. He finished 2021 in high A. He spent all last year in high A. I think he could start in Greenville again this year. So I'm just off Nick York. I'd sell him for anything you could at this point.
And before we move on, I just want to list off the 12 players that were taken picks 19 through 30 after we took Nick York, Boston. Pete Crow Armstrong, Garrett Mitchell, Jordan Walker, Kate Cavalli, Carson Tucker, Nick Bitsko, Jared Schuster, Tyler Soderstrom, Austin Wells, Bobby Miller, Jordan Westberg. Oh my Lord. So many missed opportunities there.
Jeez.
Jordan Walker, Garrett Mitchell, Wells, Miller, Westbrook. All right. I just had to get that out. But Jordan Walker in Boston. Oh, can you imagine? Jordan Walker taking aim at the monster. Oh, jeez. That would be a delight. But all right, moving on here. So yeah, basically don't go after York and sell if you can, is the synopsis there. Luis Angel Acuna, what is Texas's plan for him? It's a good question. They're locked up middle infield for the foreseeable future. I mean, he's a solid athlete. Obviously, he's a plus runner. Maybe he can move to outfield. I don't know. I don't know how this is going to play out long term. I wish I had a better answer than that, but I like the bat. He's a, like I said, plus runner. I think he's a solid, he's at least an average hitter, maybe above average. I think that's kind of, I'm kind of teetering on that. And I think there's sneaky power. Like, I saw him take batting practice before the Fall Stars game a few months back out in Arizona, and he was hitting some tanks, more so pull side pop, but there's sneaky pop there, maybe like a 15 to 18 homer guy with 20 plus steals and a solid average. So yeah, I'm definitely just buying in general, but where does he wind up with Texas long term? I think that still remains to be seen. I'm not sure on that one.
Yeah, I actually really like Acuna. He was impressive. I thought he played a really good shortstop as well. Like, I think people were like, he's moving off the position, but it looked pretty good to me at short in the AFL. Like, he was probably as good at shortstop as anybody I saw. And I think the bat's good too. You mentioned the poolside power, certainly there. Some questionable contact skills. Swing is just very reminiscent of his brother. He's a little bit smaller than Ronald, but I don't know. I like Luis Angel Acuna a lot. So I don't know what their plans are for. I mean, they've obviously got Seager and Simeon locked up for quite a while, but we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, and obviously both of those guys have dealt with some injury issues. So I don't know if he's probably up this. Maybe. I think he could be up this year. We'll see. But long term, I'd still just, anything can happen. They can make a trade. Injuries always happen. So just bet on the talent. The talent's there. Swing is very, go look at my, you probably do a search on Twitter for my handle plus his name, and you'll probably find, and then click on the video tab, and you'll probably find my video open face from batting practice that I took of him. And the swing is very, very eerily similar to his brother. Obviously, he doesn't have his brother's power, but I think there's some sneaky power in the profile. as well. All right, another kind of fun one here. Let's do some quick hits. We want to get some more of the MLB ones that we had as well. So we'll do some quick hits here. First one, Esturi Ruiz versus Leody Taveras. Who you got, Chris?
I don't know. I don't like either, honestly.
He's like, neither. I don't want either of them.
I really would say neither, but I don't know. Taveras. That's unpopular, I know, but Taveras.
I'd probably go Ruiz. I don't know how Taveras fits into that Texas outfield. And I think long term, the profiles are probably pretty similar, but I'll give the edge to Ruiz because I think he has obviously a much clearer path to playing time in that disaster of a MLB franchise out there in Oakland. So I will go Ruiz. Christian Hernandez, the Cubs shortstop prospect, highly ranked international signing, kind of been so-so, underwhelming, I should say, as a minor leaguer. Buy, sell, hold, Chris.
Easy buy for me right now. The talent's still there. It actually may be interesting. It may be better to wait a little bit longer to buy. Here's why. Like, he's going to go to low A Myrtle Beach, which is a huge pitcher's park. And I know it's supposed to be quick hit, but his stats may not look good in Myrtle Beach. He could hit for good power and make good contact, and the numbers not reflect that, which could create even – and everybody's at that point going to be like, we're off of him. He's terrible. I still think Hernandez is good. I'm buying, but it may you make him wait to buy.
Yeah, I think that was a good time. I think the price is pretty reasonable right now in Dynasty Leagues, and I'm very much in agreement that the talent's still there. Yeah, maybe we go maybe a little too high on him initially, sure, but obviously that's nature of the game that happens on a lot of these prospects, but I'm still a believer. The Cubs have had a pretty good track record developing hitting prospects in general. It's the pitching side that they kind of had an issue with. But yeah, definitely, if I had to pick one of these three words to use for him, I would say, well, if you have him, hold. If you don't have him, good time to buy. Rank these four. James Wood, Jackson Chirio, Jones, Jackson Holiday. I've recently flipped. I like Wood. I think actually this order. I go Wood, Chirio, Jones, slight gap, Jackson Holiday.
I'll go Chirio and Wood are close. And then Jones and Holiday are really close, like pretty much all in the same tier, but I prefer Chirio to Wood right at the moment. Wood could be the top prospect in baseball, though, very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. That guy's very fun to watch video on for sure. Has all the makings of a number one prospect. So with we get the top three here all debuting. You know, obviously, Carroll and Henderson are going to graduate within the first 4 days of the season, whatever it is. And Walker, you know, by the end of May at the latest, will graduate. So it's going to be that battle for that new number one. And I think James Wood has as good of a shot as anybody. So we'll see if he can maintain all the gains and all the great stuff he did last year, hitting for power, running a good amount as well, showing good contact skills, good approach. Yeah, I think he's definitely could probably be a top three prospect very, very soon. Thoughts on Axel Plaz and Aurelvis Martinez? I'll just speak quickly on Aurelvis Martinez. I'm not a fan. Like, the power's there. I've seen him take batting practice, hit some tanks. He can use the entire field when batting practice he can. He gets a little pull happy in games, but the contact skills are just not there. He's too aggressive, doesn't walk enough. He's not patient, too aggressive, chases too much. And I think, I don't know why this name comes to my mind, but it kind of fits. I just get Rougned Odor vibes with Aurelvis Martinez. And I don't know. I'm out. He's outside my top 200. I mean, if you want a low average, you know, high power guy that might not make it as a major leaguer, have at it. But I just don't see him ever turning into an impact player, unfortunately, because too much ring and miss, not enough contact skills.
Yep, 100%. Plaz, who knows, man? It's just small sample. Like, he's hit a ball as hard as 117 in the DSL, which is nuts, but I don't know. It's really too soon to tell you what I think of him other than he's got big power. I know that, but I don't know what he looks like as a prospect. We'll see when he comes stateside.
Yeah, that's one of the ones where he's shown some – actually, the performance has been there. Yeah, let's see him – when they come stateside, that's the real test. We've seen so many of these guys have these huge performances in the DSL when they come stateside, and I'm not saying, you know, coming to the complex level is – a huge jump in terms of like pitching quality, but there is a jump there. So that's when I got do it again, then I'll really start to take notice of Plaz. But yeah, solid, you know, debut in the DSL. Got some interesting tools that could be had there. So don't know. Do you think he sticks at, I know it's really hard to answer, but you know, is he a catcher long term? Like, where does he fit in? I'm not fully sure on that. I mean, it's always played. Yeah, he's always played so far. And he hit 382, 500, 706 last year, 11 doubles, 3 home runs, added a couple of steals as well. So, yeah, great start. But again, it's 86 plate appearances. You know, really, not anybody, but it's 86 plate appearances. It's not too out of the realm to see this happen a lot in the DSL. So, see what he does this upcoming year.
Right.
All right. Sorry, do you want to ask something else, Chris?
No. I was saying it was just the DSL stuff.
Yeah, another one. Ethan Salas too has been very impressive ever since he signed. I've seen some people that are like going bonkers over him. He's another one. Like, this question specifically was worth holding in a 16-team, 14 MILB spot dynasty league. Quick math: that's 224 prospects rostered. I know that's hard to answer without knowing like your other options, but he's not that range to me yet. I think he's probably 75 or so spots behind there. I get it. The upside is definitely there, but again, he's a 17-year-old catcher that has never played professional baseball in any type of organized setting. So I don't know. I'm definitely monitoring. The upside is exciting. The raw tools are very exciting, but what does he look like as a pure hitter? That remains to be seen. So I'm not going bonkers yet, but definitely one that I could see rising a good amount this year.
Yeah. Is he worth holding in that format? Probably. Like, he's like, I've got him in like the 150 range, which certainly he fits there then, because you're looking at about 200 prospects rostered. So yeah, it's hard to know at this point, but I'd roster him just for the hype at this point. Like,
yeah,
I think we forget some how much of dynasty is like perceived value too.
Yep.
And like groupthink comes into effect and everybody's like, oh, like, okay. It's the same thing I was talking about. Like, it's why Jackson Merrill's, you know, top 30 prospect in most places. But for some reason, like, Josue De Paula's not, even though they're talked about, like, they're both, like, just insane. So, like, the perceived value matters here, and I'd roster him from that standpoint. I mean, catching in a spring training game at 16 is pretty impressive, so.
Yeah, that definitely is, for sure. All right, last prospect-focused question before we head over to some MLB-centered questions. Real quick, there was a question about some of our favorite guys outside of our top 300. So I'm assuming that means more so for breakout appeal. I'll just list some names really quick, and then we can get over to, and then Chris again as well. I'm just going down my rankings here. Sal Stewart, big power. We'll see where the hit tool is. Jason Morabell, outfield prospect with Texas, still only 19 years old. And actually on my list, but they're both 19.19, so they must be born very, I don't know if the same day, but very close. Isaac Pacheco, third base prospect for Detroit. William Bergola Jr., shortstop prospect for Philadelphia. Reggie Crawford, pitcher slash maybe a little DH first base. We'll see. For the Giants, he's intriguing just because of that. Carlos De La Cruz, who's like 9 feet tall, outfield prospect for Philly. Hey, why don't you go name off some before I'll throw some more in.
Morabell's the kind of player that comes to mind, because like, this is very subjective to people's list, because like, Morabell to me is probably not a top 300 for most, but he's in my top 150, because just what he did, was his numbers are so insane. But yep. I love Morabell. So like, it's very subjective to like a particular list. So I'm not going to like hold strictly to my numbers, but I'm going to say like people I think are generally outside there. So Morabell's definitely one for me too. I've seen Chase Petty pretty low on list. I'd buy him. You said Pacheco's. He's definitely one. Yasser Mercedes is one. AJ Smith-Shawver, David Festa, Marco Raya. Like, those twins' arms are really undervalued.
Yep.
Agree. I like Will Wagner a lot, and I think Will Wagner could get some time in Houston this year with Altuve out. That'd be interesting. Wagner's pretty unique prospect of his own, second base prospect. Billy's son, Astros system. Mason Miller's finally getting some love, but he's one that I still like that I think probably isn't fully there yet. Leonardo Balcazar with the Reds I really like. Probably keep going on and on and on, but like, Kiner Delgado with the Yankees, Jose Rodriguez with the Twins. There's a lot of these. Willie Vasquez with the Rays, Ryan Clifford with the Astros.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep going all day, so I'm going to stop here.
Yeah, like you said, it is all subjective. A lot of those guys are, you know, like Yasser Mercedes is top 200 for me. So, yeah, but there's a lot of fun breakout prospects in that range. One name I was just kind of, when I was scrolling down more, he's not nearly as exciting as the other one we just listed. He's much older. He's 25 now. But Blake Sable is a guy just keep an eye on. He's probably going to break in the Giants in some way this year, play some catcher, some outfield, has been just really, really good performances all around, especially the last couple of years in the upper minors. So he's another one that more of it's like a sneaky grab for Dynasty Leagues this year. All right, let's move over to some more MLB-focused questions here. First one basically asks, how are we valuing Tim Anderson right now? And I recently wrote up Anderson in, oh, what article was that? Oh, my my shortstop ADP targets or avoids, obviously, which is for redraft. But I put Anderson as an avoid. Like, I like Anderson a good amount. Like, it's just in general, he's a very good ball player all around and very integral to what the White Sox want to do and their success. But for fantasy purposes here, I don't know. Like, he just has not been able to. Like, everyone kind of talks about Luis Robert and not being able to stay healthy, which they should, but not quite as much talk it's put on. The fact that Anderson's had a really hard time staying on the field as well. Looking at a guy that played 79 games last year and 123 in 2021, 49 in the shortened 2020 season, and 123 again in 2019. So he's played like probably around two-thirds of games in that general ballpark over the last 4 years. I don't know. It's just hard to trust a guy that, like, for where he's being valued in both Dynasty and Redraft. It's hard to kind of put that value on him or pay up for that when he's not on the field that much. And he's never been one that walks a ton, kind of a lower OBP guy, high average, obviously. But the power metrics have gone down the last couple of years. And, yeah, how much of that could be factored into his injuries? Probably some. But at the same time, like, he, again, just can't stay healthy. Kind of circles back around to that. So, I don't know. Is he a guy that's going to age well into his 30s? I don't know. I'm honestly not out on him. He's a good player, like I said, but at his value, at his kind of value and where he's being ranked, I'm kind of out.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of him, honestly. Like, there'd be a cliff coming. Maybe. He was so steady for so long. Like, you knew what you were going to get out of him. 300 plus average. Like, he was like 20 home runs, 20 steals, like, pretty consistently. But you're right. The health's becoming a factor. It wasn't for a long time, but the last 2 years, like, it's just kind of deteriorated and gone down and down. The average is still there. Like, he's going to make good contact. He's just going to run high BABIPs because of the speed and the line drives. Like, he runs really good line drive rates. So, like, everybody could point to the BABIP progression. I don't really think that's the case. I still think that Anderson is a solid player, but I'm not sure Anderson's ever been a player that's like a stud fantasy guy. Like, I mean, he was what he was, and I still think that player's there, but health's obviously a pretty major factor.
Yeah, you can bank on him for a 300 average. He's been over that the last four years. Career 288 guy, which is kind of funny because he was so low for a couple of years. Then he's turning this high average, you know, kind of staple. But I said, yeah, doesn't walk a ton. Quality of contact's kind of gone down. Injured too much. And I just did some quick math. He's played in around 68.5% of the White Sox games over the last 4 years. So, yeah, I'm not really looking to invest in Tim Anderson in really any formats. Unless it's super cheap, which is not going to be based on where his ADP's at and where I see him in a lot of rankings. I don't think the price is going to be something I want to pay. Next question here. How best sell for a competitive rebuild? And I guess that's in a roundabout way that's asking how to, what I call, retool. It's really, the way I kind of look at it, and obviously I'm probably of a different mindset on this than Chris. And, you know, like I've mentioned this trade before on this podcast, probably a couple of times over the years, but it kind of just fits kind of what I think that a good way to do this is. I think it was before 2021. Yeah, I think it was before 2021 season. I remember it was like February or something. I traded Mookie Betts. Now, this is in my home keeper league where I've had some success, some championships. And I traded Mookie Betts and got back Bo Bichette and Luis Robert. So is the best player in that deal still to this day Mookie Betts? Yes. But now I have two guys that are younger and I think overall can provide more value than a Mookie Betts can. So kind of making deals like that, when you start getting some of your, not, it doesn't have to even be your studs. Like, this might be a Mookie Betts. Even it's like a, I don't know, like a Reese Hoskins or someone that's just like a really good player, but starting to get a little bit older. Maybe you trade him for a guy that's, you know, a little bit younger, and then you get that you think can be on that level or even surpass it someday, get a nice second piece, whether it's a player or pick, whatever. I think it's kind of what I like to do. And if you just do that a little bit here, a little bit there, I think that can kind of extend your success and keep you, you know, competitive for years to come.
Yeah, I agree. I think just having a good feel about when players at peak value is important.
Yep.
Like, if you do it right, you won't have to rebuild. I mean, I think you can build a sustainable team for the long term in most leagues. Like, in a 10-team league, like, you should always be competing. Like, you should never have to rebuild in a 10. Get a little deeper than maybe, but I think you're right. It's just kind of like making little trades, like, here or there. And just if you are constantly, like, upgrading your team just marginally, then you're going to be just way better. I did a whole podcast for my Substack on how to rebuild a dynasty team, like an hour of just talking about rebuilding. So feel free to check that out if you'd like. But yeah, I think there's just knowing when to sell a player, knowing what are good values, like then you'll make just making those marginally good trades each time takes you a long way.
Yep. It's gradual. You're not going to do it all at once, but yeah, it's doing it. You know, one trade like that every offseason. Again, it doesn't have to be a stud. And it doesn't have to be a guy that's going to fall off a cliff. Like, I didn't think Mookie Betts was going to fall off a cliff anytime soon, but I knew that even though maybe it was a slight step back, then I had the team to withstand that step back. And I knew there was a potential, and I'm still kind of waiting on Robert to put it all together. But, you know, obviously, Bo Bichette alone is kind of close to Mookie Betts in value. So I think I still won that deal and could even win it even more if Robert can actually get his head out of his you-know-what and stay healthy and on the field and put it all together for a full year. Still waiting on that. But, yeah, this kind of is doing that gradually over time, and you'll maintain some success there. All right, what's the next one? Oh, this was a fun one. Project the Orioles lineup in 2025. I think that's a fun way of saying how and where do all these fun infield prospects fit in? I mean, okay, let's start at – okay, let's go around the infield diamond here. Let's start at first base. Who do you think is their first baseman? I mean, I guess let's take out all the guys like Mountcastle and guys that are established for this. Let's kind of focus on the prospects here. Assume that Mountcastle leaves and all these other guys leave. I think first baseman's probably, I'll say Kobe Mayo. I think he kind of moves over across the diamonds. I think he's the most logical fit for there. And obviously he has the power to fit in over there. So I think Mayo's at first.
It's probably pretty reasonable. I'd lean that way too. I just don't see Mayo sticking at third, honestly.
Yeah, especially, you know, is Gunner going to stay there? I guess we'll go over to third base now and do the corners here. Do you think it's Gunner? Do you maybe think he goes back to short and maybe a Westberg is over there? What are your thoughts on the hot corner?
It's a good question. Westberg's so versatile that he can kind of play and fit in anywhere. I do think that Westberg finds a spot, though. Like, and even if he doesn't have a consistent position, like, I think he's just going to get enough at bats just solely based on the fact that he can play all over the infield. So that would be something to watch there. But, yeah, I mean, Gunner might be back to third because 2025, Holiday – that's maybe what debuting at short.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. I think, you know, let's just kind of go over it all. I think it's going to be Mayo at first. I think Norby at second. Gunner at the hot corner. Holiday at short. I think Westberg could kind of be in that Chris Taylor kind of role playing all over the place. And outfield and Colton Cowser. I think it's going to be Hessen Kjerstad. Or maybe he DHs a little bit. Who knows? And then, you know, one of like Stowers or Beavers or a Jed Fabian kind of fits in. But obviously, it won't be just these guys in 2025. There's still some of the guys that are still there. But, yeah, I think that's kind of how I see them. Do you see Norby being the guy at second base?
Yeah, most likely. I mean, this is where it just comes interesting. I still like Westberg a bit more, but I still the question of where does Westberg fit? Yeah. I guess that's the biggest mark. Like, I think we know that Norby's a second baseman through and through, but as far as Westbrook, like he's just his versatility is just going to help the team out a lot, I think. So
right.
That's kind of where I'm leaning that way. So yeah, I think Norby's probably at second base, but don't be surprised when Westbrook's getting regular reps around the infield.
Yeah, I think his versatility is more valuable like in that Chris Taylor type of role that he's been out with the Dodgers for so long now. A couple of younger, they put up the kind of phrases as valuing young-ish breakout pitchers like Kyle Bradish and Mitch Keller. So I guess we'll kind of dive into them. What are your, obviously, I know you've been talking about Bradish for a good bit now. So we'll start there, Chris. What are your thoughts on Bradish and how are you valuing him right now?
Well, I wouldn't be scared off by his bad spring start the other day. It was not good, like 9 earned and 2 2/3. But I mean, Bradish broke out last season in the second half and nobody saw it because they just saw the overall line of a near 5 ERA, but he had a 3.38 ERA in the second half. And everybody's kind of failed to miss that or failed to see that at 3.28, excuse me, over 71 innings. So like what he did was legit. He's changed the pitch mix. His velo has been up a tick. The velo was down in the last start, which is very interesting. So I like him. Mitch, assuming this is Mitch Keller, because I read it Keller, I was like, Brad Keller? No, Mitch Keller.
I mean, yeah, I'm assuming Mitch as well. I mean, if they want us to dive into Brad, and I don't want to dive into Brad Keller, so let's assume it's Mitch.
I just don't want anything to do with Mitch Keller, to be honest. Like, he makes change every offseason and just doesn't do anything, so I'm just not. I'd rather not.
Yeah, I mean, last year, 3.91 ERA. I mean, okay, he's okay, I guess, but do you want a 4 ERA and a below average? That's in your standard, like, 12-team kind of mixed league that a lot of people that listen probably play in. That's a streamer. That's like a spot star guy. Maybe he's on your roster for a couple of weeks and you drop him. You know, deeper league, obviously, he'll have more value as a guy that could stick long term. But I just don't see any additional level. Like you mentioned, he's made so many changes to his arsenal. And sweeper now, it's a sweeper revolution in baseball. And Mitch Keller has one. But it just none of his pitches get high whiff rates. Like his best last year was 28-1 on the sweeper, which is not even, I guess his slider was at 28. He throws 6 different pitches last year. Years, like, he had a 30.5% whiff rate on the cutter. Yeah, it's like it was four seam cutter, curveball, changeup, but now it's all of a sudden four seam sinker, sweeper, curveball, changeup, slider. Yeah, just not. And four seamer and sinker both get hit too much. Doesn't miss many enough bats and doesn't get like a super high. I guess ground ball was 49% last year, almost 50, but yeah, he's okay. He's meh. That's the way I describe Mitch Keller. It's not scientific. It's not analytical, but meh definitely fits Mitch Keller. Don't do it. Don't let friends get in on Mitch Keller. That's what I'll end this on here. All right. Let's see. I guess the last one here is we got to wrap it up here for 2023 redraft only, Colton Cowser or Sal Frelick. I mean, this is tough, Chris. I like both these guys a lot, but I think it all depends on like who's up first. I mean, I think there's a little easier path to playing time for Cowser, but it's hard to say. I mean, I guess if they were both to get equal number of at-bats this year, I probably lean Cowser, but what is it you're looking for? Like, Frelick, I think, is safer, higher floor. You want a little bit more power speed, go Colton Cowser. You want like a higher average guy that could probably score a ton of runs, you go Sal Frelick. But I guess in a vacuum, I would lean Colton Cowser.
I'm going Frelick. I'm just not sure the Orioles push Cowser. He's been good this spring. I don't know. I mean, Hayes has been good. Austin Hayes has been really good. Anthony Santander, I'm not sure they're ready to come off yet. They obviously have Seddon Mullins as well. Frelick just has the easier path, in my opinion. And especially if Garrett Mitchell is not healthy. I know he's came back in the lineup recently, but if he's not healthy or just not performing, then I just think Frelick just probably gets more play. I think this poll just strictly matters on who's playing more, and I think Frelick gets more played appearances.
Yep, that's 100% what it boils down to. So I could definitely see that scenario happening. And yeah, we'll see. I'd love to see them both get some run this year, but not exactly easy outfields to break into. We'll see how Mitchell does. Obviously, if Yelich can stay healthy for a full year, but I think we both see. What do you think is realistic for them? Do you think, let's put for both of them over under? We'll go 450 plate appearances. What are your thoughts?
I was gonna set the line at 400. So
I said 400. I was like, gosh, should I go 400 or 450? I think it's right in that range. Where they get roughly 2/3 of a season in.
Yeah, yeah. I think Frelick gets 400. I think Kalsrud gets 250.
You think a little bit lower than that for Kalsrud? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll definitely see. Obviously, that's half the battle is getting those plate appearances. So I guess whoever comes at first. But I think in general, I think we both like both these guys. I think that's pretty easy to say there. All right, a few questions we couldn't get to. We wanted to keep this to a reasonable time here. But thank you to everyone for all the questions. We'll definitely do more of these throughout the season. And opening day is about a week. What's opening day, 29th, 30th this year? What day is it exactly, Chris?
30th, I think.
I think it's the 30th, yeah. So when you're listening to this on Monday the 23rd, not Monday, wow, it's been a week. Thursday the 23rd, you'll be about 1 week from opening day. Last week, we made it. We got obviously a little more spring training to go, and then we'll be fully into setting lineups and all that fun stuff and waiver wires and fab, and obviously you still make trades, but yeah, it's coming, people. It's coming. But thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, follow us on Twitter at RotoClega, EricRoth04, at ToolshitPod. Drop that rating and review. Check out my Patreon, Chris's Substack. A lot of great stuff on both of those platforms. Now and into the season, and we will catch you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.